nobody is ever exploited until somebody decides to exploit them. Nobody is ever raped until somebody decides to rape them. Nobody is ever abused until somebody decides to abuse them.
Gabrielle Congreve Begenstoss is a regional navigator for Support Within Reach, a nonprofit dedicated to serving people dealing with sexual violence. April is Sexual Assault Awareness Month, and it's a good time to remind people of this problem that affects so many. And it's a good time to also consider ways in which we as a society can work to provide a safer future for everyone.
Honestly, every month should be Sexual Assault Awareness Month. The prevalence of sexual violence in our country is staggering. 1 out of every 6 women. So, I mean, if you're standing with a group of friends, chances are there's at least one survivor in the group. I'm 39, and I would have to say that almost every single woman I know has experienced some form of sexual violence, whether it's harassment, rape, exploitation. It's really staggering. And the majority of cases don't get reported either. On average, there are over 400,000 victims aged 12 or older of rape and sexual assault every year in the United States. Women and girls do experience sexual violence at the highest rates. Men do experience sexual violence. One thing we try to do a lot in, you know, sexual violence work and safe harbor work is not always use she, because traditionally we always think of women as being the victims of sexual assault. And it is true that approximately 1 in 33 American men have experienced attempted or completed rape in their lifetime. So, you know, that also is a pretty significant number. 15% of all sexual assault and rape victims are under the age of 12. And 93% of juvenile sexual assault victims know their attacker. 30% of child victims tend to be between the ages of 4 and 7. With sexual assault in general, race plays a huge role. Native Americans and Indigenous people are at a much higher risk of sexual violence, and they're twice as likely to experience a rape or sexual assault compared to all other races. 41% of sexual assaults against Indigenous people are committed by a stranger, which is an incredibly high number. Most people are raped by people they know. Also, people with disabilities are at a really high likelihood of being assaulted. So approximately 80% of women and 30% of men with intellectual disabilities have been sexually assaulted. And 50% of those women have been assaulted more than 10 times.
Oh my goodness. How do we change this tide?
Obviously, we want women to take precautions, you know, or anyone really with prevalence of men as victims as well to take precautions. But really what we need to be doing is teaching people not to rape people. Honestly, we need to be educating our sons about consent, sexual violence, healthy relationships, respect for other humans. And of course, women, girls need to be educated about all those things too, as do non-binary children. But overwhelmingly, rape is committed by men. And we have a culture where women are presented as objects or something men are entitled to. For example, that whole thing about getting friend-zoned. You're not entitled to a sexual relationship with a woman just because you're nice to her and friends with her. And if that's why you're being friends with her, like, that's pretty manipulative. And perhaps you're not the nice guy you think you are after all. So I was teaching consent, red flags in relationships, and what healthy and unhealthy relationships look like. And so there's these 3 different activities you're supposed to do. And we ended up we're going to have to split the module up because the youth I was working with just got so into the healthy versus unhealthy relationships. They started like analyzing their past experiences, and it was a really productive conversation. And I think a lot of kids, they don't grow up with an example of what a healthy relationship looks like because we aren't taught how to build healthy relationships. It becomes this generational thing where you marry a man who talks to you the way your father talked to your mother, even though you hated it and it made your mom feel bad. And then your daughter goes on to do the same thing. Not to sound like a total hippie, but we do have to break generational curses and patterns in our families. These things should be covered in school way more than they are. I think schools are getting slightly better than they were back in the 80s and the 90s, but there's still a gap. We also need to be teaching our kids way more about consent. And I feel like parents have gotten better about that. Even some schools have, but again, there's still a gap. Studies have shown that schools that offer comprehensive sex education have fewer teen pregnancies. They have just better results overall in relation to students' sexual health. And I don't know why it's so scary to like think our children will get comprehensive sex education. I know a lot of parents aren't super comfortable talking about that with their kids. So you think it would be a relief for some people. When I was a teenager, we didn't really talk about sex or anything like that, or relationships or what they should look like. But you know, that's changed over the years, and those things should change. You know, people should grow.
I'm talking with Gabrielle Congreve-Begenstoss. She's a regional navigator for Support Within Reach. It's an area nonprofit dedicated to serving people dealing with sexual violence. We are talking about sexual education. And with April being Sexual Assault Awareness Month, it's just a good time to have these conversations about relationship health and sexual health, both of which have a huge impact on society's health overall. You know, it's interesting you were talking about conversations with kids and what it was like when you were a kid. I don't think I remember my parents talking with me much at all about sex or relationships other than sort of an advisement to not get pregnant. And I feel like now it seems like we're all having a lot of micro conversations with our kids and they just don't end. Possibly to the dismay of our children, they might want us to just be quiet already and stop talking about it. However, it's important to keep it on the table.
It's not like one conversation you have with your child and then boom, they're good like the rest of their lives.
It seems like consent is a big piece of the puzzle. How do you go about teaching consent when you're out educating kids?
We always use this video called Consent is Like a Cup of Tea. And it's narrated by a British guy. And it's like very charming and animated. I highly recommend it. But the most important thing to know about consent is not just not saying no. It's an enthusiastic affirmation of your desire to continue with whatever activity. And that can change through the course of a sexual encounter. You should communicate during it. It's good to, you know, verbally ask for consent, but you also need to watch somebody's body language, their facial expressions. If you have a partner who's maybe been abused as a child or experienced some sort of sexual violence, are they disassociating? Are they checking out? Do they look like they're, you know, not really there anymore? And it's important for everybody involved to know that you can always withdraw consent, whether you initiate or whether you initially consent. At any time, you can stop. You can say, this doesn't feel right. I think another thing that's important to note is that if somebody consents to intercourse with a condom and you do not use a condom, that is sexual assault. That is a violation of the consent you were given. tough position to be in, because you did consent to sexual activity, but all of a sudden you find out this very important protective factor you were lied to about. So, you know, I mean, imagine trying to report that to law enforcement. Like, God, that would be a nightmare. Verbal check-ins are great, but the facial expressions, as I mentioned before, and body language. Does your partner suddenly start like jumping a little when you touch them? Do they like shift away from you? If they're shifting, maybe they're just not into where you're touching them and they're trying to give you nonverbal cues, but maybe they're actually freaked out and they don't know how to say no. So at that point, you know, ask them. It's really important, I think, for kids to know that they can withdraw consent at any time. And if their partner doesn't respect that, that is sexual assault. Another thing too, we talk a lot about drug or alcohol facilitated sexual assaults. If you are in a relationship with somebody and you're engaging in sex while intoxicated, obtaining consent becomes even more important. And you really have to make sure that it's not just the drugs or alcohol talking, that they are actually wanting to do this. But let's say they pass out, then there's no consent. Giving consent while intoxicated is a very slippery slope, legally speaking and morally speaking. Like, how much can you actually consent when you've been drinking or using drugs? It's interesting because consent in some ways is the simplest thing in the world, but also the most complicated, just because we haven't received education about it.
As far as people not being sure how to say no, how can parents help their children be stronger in that position?
One thing I have noticed with parents whose kids are younger kids, and I've done this with my own kids, is you don't have to give grandma a hug if you don't want to. Like, giving them that sense of body autonomy and letting them know that if they don't want to be touched, that's fine. But there are sometimes when I give my kids a hug and I can tell they're not into it. And so I just step right back. I don't try to force it. When I was growing up, you had to give grandma a hug. Like, you didn't get a choice. And now I see more and more parents who are helping their kids say, no, I don't want a hug right now, or things along those lines. And I think that is kind of a great seed that's been planted in this younger generation in terms of consent. Like, I think, you know, maybe 20, 10, 15 years from now, I think we'll see it really pay off in terms of how people feel about their own bodies and ownership over their own bodies. And maybe that's one of the biggest problems with rape culture and why sexual assault is so prevalent, is that we're not taught that we have ownership over our bodies, especially as women. We're taught, you know, that we are something to be enjoyed or consumed. And a lot of heterosexual men are, you know, taught that women are for them, that they are entitled to them in some way. And nobody is entitled to somebody else, ever.
That is Gabrielle Congreve Bagenstoss. She is a regional navigator for Support Within Reach, a sexual violence resource center. April is Sexual Assault Awareness Month. It's a good time to have these conversations on the table. But as Gabrielle said earlier in the conversation, every month should be Sexual Assault Awareness Month. It's a problem that impacts all of us, whether or not we have been sexually assaulted. The relational impacts run far and wide, and they affect relationships at work. They affect relationships all over the community. If you've been sexually assaulted, if you're dealing with sexual violence in your home, connect with Support Within Reach. Their 800 number is 800-708-2727. They have offices around the listening area, but if you call that number, you can get help right away. Area Voices is made possible by the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund and by the citizens of Minnesota.